Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor Lacaine. In our ongoing search for solutions, today we'll discuss ways to be healthy. We're now immersed in a global pandemic with widespread concern about the coronavirus. People want to know, how can I stay healthy? Of course, we'll use masks when around others, maybe a double mask, keep a distance socially, and wash our hands. But what else can we do to keep ourselves healthy? Our guest today is my friend, Susan Weiss-Bolin, who helps people get and stay healthy through the practice of Ayurveda, one of the world's most powerful mind-body health systems. Developed in India, it offers a body of wisdom designed to help people stay vibrant and healthy. Susan is a Chopra-certified Ayurvedic practitioner, cooking instructor, and meditation teacher. Her first book, Ayurveda's Beginner's Guide, has been published in 5 languages. Her new book is titled Seasonal Self-Care Rituals: Eat, Breathe, Move, and Sleep Better According to Your Dosha. Susan is here with us today to share her knowledge of how to get and stay healthy. Susan Weiss-Bolin, welcome to All Together Now.
Oh, Eleanor, I'm so excited to be with you. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, well, I loved reading your book, and it's so beautifully written. And it, honestly, when I read your book, I felt like I was visiting a spa.
I wish we could.
I know. So for our listeners, here's the book, Seasonal Self-Care Rituals. And it's a beautiful book. I love the design and the cover.
And I know. I was so touched when I saw what they did. It feels so good. Like there's a texture and raised letters. I know. I was like beyond. It really came out beautiful.
Yeah. So for our listeners who may not have heard of Ayurveda, can you explain what is this strange sounding pathway to health?
Sure, absolutely. So Ayurveda is a 5,000-year-old system of medicine that comes from India. I like to say to people, it's like Chinese medicine, but from India, because people are so much more familiar with Chinese medicine. Mm-hmm. It seems, you know, acupuncture and Chinese herbs and so on is really been very well received in the West. And so Ayurveda is right behind. As a matter of fact, sister sciences of Ayurveda are yoga and meditation. So we already see, you know, the absolute explosion of both of those, yoga first and then meditation. So my hope is that Ayurveda comes next. So it's a system of medicine that came about, as we said, 5,000 years ago in India, when different medical practitioners who took care of people in their villages and so on, they were called rishis, which in Sanskrit means seer or wise one. They saw that different people got sick in different ways, and then they also got better in different ways. They healed differently. And so they started to create this system that recognized this different mind-body constitution that people have. And they put these people into categories, and then they treated them according to what was out of balance within that category. They're based on the elements that we'll talk about, the elements in nature, and we have the elements inside of us as well. And so when something is out of balance, too little or too much, we need to do things to help bring us back into harmony with nature. And a lot of that has to do with food. We say food is medicine in Ayurveda. And also breath work, yoga, meditation, daily lifestyle rituals that help a person keep their immune system vibrant and strong, keep their digestive system working well. The digestive system is sort of like ground zero for Ayurveda. If your digestive system isn't working well, if you're not able to extract your nutrients and effectively get rid of waste, then you have a lot of toxins in your body. And so we look at how to balance that in a person as well. And meditation, stress reduction, a whole system around that, but very unique based on the unique individual, never one size fits all.
Yeah, I love that. And this whole concept of looking at the body type and that different bodies require different treatment, different nutrients, that makes perfect sense to me. And in fact, it actually has foundations in Greek medicine. that the Greek medicine talked about the bodily humors. Nice. The word for it in Ayurveda, as you say, is the dosha. But exactly. it's like, what is your body type? So it's not so strange. After all, I think it's like a lot of ancient wisdom of how did people heal, you know, before. And we think about this modern Western medicine has brought in some amazing things through drugs and surgery. Like if I'm in an emergency room, I want that modern Western medicine, you bet. But in terms of keeping the body healthy and preventing disease, it just seems to me a very smart and gentle way that's kind of aligned with nature. So I'm fascinated to learn more. I know very little about Ayurveda. I know what I read from your book. So now I have to go back and read.
You know it all.
I know everything I need to know now,
right.
Which is actually really good. But now you intrigue me. I want to read your first book about the Ayurveda Beginner's Guide, because I want to learn that too. Maybe you'll come back and we'll talk about it. Well, let's talk about some of that now, because most of our listeners, I'm assuming, are not Ayurveda experts. Talk a little bit, what are these body types and how can our listeners figure out like which body type am I?
Right. So the body types are based on the elements, as I mentioned, outside of us. So outside in nature, we have five, what we call in Sanskrit, Mahabhutas. So if any Indians are listening or those who speak Sanskrit, they will understand Mahabhutas, great elements. Pancha means five. Pancha Mahabhutas. And those are air, space, fire, water, and earth are the way that we describe those five elements. And so we as human beings are made up of those same five elements. Some predominate more than others. We have all five because we need all five to function. But we pair them off into groups of twos, which make up the three doshas. So I'll describe to you the first dosha, which is called Vata, V-A-T-A. Vata dosha is comprised of the elements of air and space. And so if you can imagine a person who has a lot of air and space in them, they tend to be like willowy and flexible and spontaneous. And they can be a little bit spacey and ungrounded because of all that movement going on in the mind. They tend to be easily distracted because of all that this and that, like every shiny new object sort of calls their attention, but that also creates a lot of creativity. They're highly creative people, but that distraction leaves like unfinished projects everywhere. Like, oh, I want to try this and I want to try that. And then, you know, you pile up of all these unfinished things around the house or whatever you're trying to do. And so also all that air and wind can make it hard to sleep. It can create insomnia and rumination. Yeah, you're definitely a combination of Pitta and Vata, but we'll get there.
Yeah.
I only say that because I know you. If I didn't know you, I would not diagnose.
Okay.
So that it just creates all this movement. And then also all of that air and wind in the body can cause gas and bloating. And it can cause diseases, so dryness of the joints, arthritis, dryness in the colon and the bowels, which can cause constipation, irritable bowel syndrome, IBD, IBS. So there's many different maladies associated with each dosha. So we'll get to that. But when a Vata person is balanced, as I mentioned, they're creative and spontaneous. They move like the wind. They hate a routine. They love to try new things. But when they're out of balance, they do have these issues of lacking concentration and focus and inability to get to follow through, really, with things. So that's Vata.
And I should say, just in case our listeners wanted, there's only three body types. So you're not going to have to memorize 20 different ones and there will be no test at the end. But listeners,
there is a dosha quiz. There's a dosha quiz in my book and there are dosha quizzes online. So you can take your quiz to give you a guideline of where you may fall in this.
Well, you know, I love the quiz. It was my favorite part of the book and it is worth getting the book just to take that quiz and find out which dosha, which body type are you. So listeners, pay attention. Okay, that's body type number one. What are the other two?
Well, I want to say thank you. I did spend a long time creating that quiz because there are dosha quizzes everywhere online. Mm. And I took my nearly 15 years of practicing Ayurveda and working with my clients to really hone in to where I saw sort of in modern Ayurveda, where the doshas express themselves. And so that's where that quiz came from. It's a little bit different than what people might find online.
It's really excellent. I loved it.
Thank you. So the second dosha that we'll talk about is a combination of fire and water. And that dosha is called Pitta, P-I-T-T-A, Pitta dosha. And Pitta has a little bit of water, or else they would just sort of like combust because of all the fire in their system. Pittas tend to express themselves in a very fiery, heated, hot way. So they can be argumentative, critical, judgmental, downright mean when they're out of balance and very angry. And they tend to blame others when things go wrong. Whereas Vata dosha tends to blame herself. She's like, what did I do? I don't understand what went wrong. Whereas Pitta dosha is like, it's your fault. And then they'll give you all the backup of why it is your fault. But when they're balanced mentally, they're very strong speakers. They're great leaders and communicators. They look you right in the eye. They don't have any trouble finding the right words to say. And they're great at changing your worldview and opinion to theirs. But when they're out of balance, they can be a little bit of the scary dosha. Bodily Pitta tends to have a medium strong build. They have excellent digestion because they have so much heat in their body to metabolize their food. Whereas we mentioned the Vata is dry, so they have trouble metabolizing their food. But if Pitta is too hot, they will have diarrhea, where Vata can be constipated. Pitta has so much heat, they can have loose stools or diarrhea or many bowel movements a day. They can also have heartburn, acid reflux, rosacea, breakouts, so much heat in their body that their hair turns gray early. I had a little bit of that happening. They can also be bald early. That happens a lot.
It makes you look very distinguished.
Oh, thank you. And that heat can cause all sorts of physical ailments, especially migraine, headaches, just so much of that buildup of heat. So Pitta really needs to do a lot to mitigate that excess heat, which we'll talk about. But then the last dosha we call Kapha, K-A-P-H-A. Kapha dosha is comprised of earth and water. So they are the earth mamas. They are the earth papas. They are Panchamama. They're a little bit rounder, a little bit softer. They're the foundation that everything else can stand on. They sort of hold the world up, Kapha dosha. And they tend to be very caring and nurturing people, very loving, but that can easily turn into being like greedy and needy and cloying. And I say the hoarders are Kapha. They like to surround themselves with a whole bunch of stuff, like sort of nest, so they feel comfortable. And they can do that with people too. They keep people way longer than they should. They stay in jobs longer than they should. They just get this like inertia. They can't move on because of that heaviness of the earth and water. But like I said, when they're balanced, they're very healthy. They have extraordinary stamina. They're like the Energizer Bunny. Well, maybe Vata's more the Energizer Bunny. It's a rabbit and the tortoise and the hare, where Kapha's like the tortoise sort of plodding along, but definitely makes it to the finish line, where the hare is just bopping all along, talking to everybody and gets lost and distracted. That's Vata. So, you know, it's just slow and steady wins the race is Kapha dosha. Mm-hmm. Out of balance, so they really tend towards obesity, inertia, just really getting stuck in situations and really having a hard time seeing their way out of it. And that's usually just too much food in the system, too much information in the mind that they're not letting go of. Kapha needs to create space in order for things to start moving again.
So I'm now thinking, I'm thinking of five friends I have who I want to send to you because these descriptions so well fit who they are and what's happening to them.
It's whenever I teach a class, whether it's 20 people or like 200 people, I just love watching everybody's reactions as they hear this. And they're often like thinking, oh, that's my husband. That's my partner. That's
right.
My wife. You know, instead of themselves, they're like blaming everyone else.
Oh yes, wouldn't that be the pit of people the would do that, down. Like pointing yeah. to the other one.
Right, it's your fault. Your fault the house is a mess.
Well, that's great. So, you know, this is fascinating, and it's a little bit out of the average experience of an American to be as expert as you are in an Indian health and medical system. How did you get started and get interested in Ayurveda, and what's your own journey with it?
Yeah, I like to say I'm just a Jewish girl from Baltimore, but somehow this really, really called to me. There's actually quite a lot of historical overlap between Jews and Indians. You know, the Jewish religion is over 5,000 years old. Ayurveda is over 5,000 years old. And it's sort of like there's just, you know, these ancient wisdom schools, if you take out their religion, in Judaism, we have laws of kashrut and how to eat that were very wise, that kept people healthy. And I found the same thing in Ayurveda. It was really fascinating. That's just a little bit of it. But what happened to me is that I owned a bookstore for many years in Baltimore, a New Age bookshop called Breathe Books. And I had a little Ayurvedic section in the bookstore. So I started to learn a little bit about it. But I decided personally that I needed some sort of cleanse. I was feeling very stuck. At that time, I weighed about 220 pounds. And I had weighed that for a long time.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So, you know, I carried it well, though. I still think I was, you know, beautiful. But I carried it.
Right.
Know?
And you're so right. Svelte now. Okay. So
well.
Right here, you got the attention of at least 70% of our listeners. Everybody wants to lose weight.
I'm pretty curvy, kapha, you know, normal, but I never met you when I weighed that. It's true, because by the time I met you was when I got married, and right. I had already lost that weight, about 50, 60 pounds at that point.
Okay, so you lost huge amounts of weight. To be with yourself now, and you've found the love of your life. Now yeah. You've got 100% of our listeners paying attention. What is this woman doing? I need to know.
It's a really good story because it's in the book a little bit, but I met my husband when I was 45 years old, and we got married at 40 when I was 47. So a lot of, and I'm 57 now, I'm 58. So a lot of women, look, I don't want to say find hope, but there's always, you know, a path to find what it is in life that you want. And for me, Ayurveda elucidated that path. It helped to get rid of a lot of toxins that were blocking me mentally and physically, mm-hmm. that were keeping me pushing things away, staying independent, saying, I can do this by myself. I don't need anybody else around me. But when I decided to go, what started the whole process was in 2007, I decided to go to the Chopra Center to have what's called Panchakarma. Pancha, you may remember from the beginning, means five from Pancha Mahabhutas. And karma means action. So Panchakarma means five actions, which are these different body therapies and mind therapies too, that they do to a person to expel toxins from the body. And so I went to the Chopra Center for that experience, a 10-day Panchakarma. Oil massages, something called pounding with herbs, herbalized enemas to help scrape out excess dosha from the body that's creating imbalance, as well as yoga and meditation. And also I took a course then when I was doing the 10-day program. At the time it was called Perfect Health. At the time there was a Chopra Center. It doesn't really exist anymore in the same way, but I had wonderful teachers and it was an incredible experience. And I came home and I thought, what do I eat? So I went to my bookstore and I got one of my, you know, cookbooks off the shelf by a teacher named Amadea Morningstar, who's written two of the seminal Ayurvedic cookbooks. And I started cooking like sort of the most famous Ayurvedic dish, which is called khichdi. And khichdi is a combination of spices and oil. We use ghee, mostly clarified butter, split yellow mung beans and basmati rice and some vegetables. That is one of the most nourishing dishes you can feed yourself. And when I made it and I had my first taste, my whole body just like settled in and went, it was like everything was satisfied for the first time in my life. And so I was like, this is incredible. And so I started, you know, I cleaned out my whole kitchen. I started cooking Ayurvedically. I went to Kripalu and then to New Mexico and studied with Amadea Morningstar, who became my dear friend. And now we teach together all these years later. I love her so much. And so I really just dove in 100% into the process, started doing the body massage, which is called Abhyanga, doing the tongue scraping, the ear oiling, the oil pulling, the gargling with sesame seed oil. And I started doing everything, which I tell my clients not to do. I'm like, go baby steps, right, one thing at a time, you know? But I don't know. I was like 44 years old. And it was just like so overdue. And the weight really fell off, which I'd never been able to lose weight like that before. It's not about the weight, that's right, just a symptom, but that let go. Mm-hmm. I had gone to Weight Watchers. I mean, they became millionaires off of me. I think Weight Watchers did, but it was really a starvation diet. I always felt incomplete and unsatisfied and then would binge and purge and had bouts of bulimia along the way in my 20s. Mm. And so Ayurveda was so nourishing, the whole mind, body, spirit, and gave me tools for when things came up for how to deal with them. I was already a meditator and did yoga, so that really helped that I already had that in my back pocket. I was a major meditator going to long, 10-day, 2-week silent meditation retreats and really centering. So Ayurveda was the key that was missing in my life. Mm-hmm. And then boom, 60 pounds. And then I lost also 80 points of my cholesterol, went from 240 to 160. So the body was just waiting, like the mind was getting there. And then the body was waiting to catch up. And then suddenly I felt whole. I felt really whole and complete. Like now I know what it was. Like my doshas were balanced. I was so out of balance previously. And so, and then just like all my customers in the bookstore were like, what are you doing? How can I do this? You look amazing, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, look, let me go get a certification. Cause that's, what I do is I went and got a whole bunch of certifications and then started teaching Ayurveda, doing one-on-one consultations, teaching cooking classes, so much so that we had a teaching kitchen in our house. And I eventually I opened an Ayurveda cafe in my bookstore, which was super successful. But then I wanted to just do Ayurveda full time and I couldn't do both. So I closed my bookstore after 10 years in 2014. And since then, I've been a full-time practitioner. But then the books started to happen, but that's another story.
Right.
So that's the story. And really I got married in the middle of all that because I cleared the kapha mm-hmm. out of my mind, I
right.
scraped that away and see Larry, my husband, he walked into the bookstore and then was like, I can marry you.
Well, that's a fascinating romance story. And also you write in the book about another famous customer that you had, Oprah Winfrey, who lived in Baltimore and started out in, I think, a news anchor in Baltimore television. So she would stop by occasionally, huh?
That's funny. You really did read the book. Wow.
I actually read the book of all my guests and I'm shocked at people who invite people on and they don't.
Yeah. But, thank you. Yeah, I were in high school. I mean, I've always been fascinated by food and I like became a sort of vegetarian when I was 16. I call myself back then a pea vegetarian, pasta, pizza, and peanut butter, which is why I weigh 220 pounds.
There you go.
Yeah. Didn't know there was cheese and cookies and cake. I guess I could have the C's too. Those are all C's. But anyway.
Calories and cholesterol to the max.
There you go. And Oprah had a TV show and was in a news station in Baltimore and lived in a complex where I worked in a health food store, where I loved working in that health food store so much. And she used to come in nearly every day after work, before work, and eat there. And always lamented, why she couldn't lose weight. A lot of us thought that eating, health food meant that you were being healthy, but carob covered almonds and cheese cauliflower casseroles are not the answer for everybody. Right. It's really good for Vata dosha, but not for Kapha. And as we really see from Oprah's story is great because then she lost a ton of weight. Mm-hmm. You remember, and she wheeled out that little wheelbarrow with like 60 pounds of fat, but she couldn't keep that weight off because that's not who she is. She's not a Vata dosha. She's kapha, body, pitta, mind. And she's very sharp, right? But so we see that she has sort of settled into this, you know, rounder, larger body, which is more natural for a kapha dosha. So you can't force yourself to be another dosha. Like, I can't force myself to be a skinny mini because that's not who I am. Mm-hmm. So it's really wonderful in Ayurveda when you learn your constitution and you learn how to be comfortable in your own body and you don't try to be something you're not. Like some examples like Uma Thurman, Calista Flockhart, Halle Berry, they all are, even Nicole Kidman, although she's a little bit more pitta, they all are very thin, kind of willowy women.
Right.
And that's their natural state of being. But then you look at Oprah or Queen Latifah, or I don't know. I mean, there's a whole host of people we could think of who are a little bit rounder, and they're healthy. And that's their state of being. They're like, you know, I was watching Queen Latifah's new show and oh my God, that woman is amazing. But that's her body. Or like Lizzo or some, I mean, Lizzo is absolutely athletic and incredible in a larger body. We can't try to mold ourselves into these weird places that we weren't born into. And Ayurveda gives you permission and says, yes, this is who you are. Be that shape and let's work within that to find our perfect balance.
Yeah, that's really great. And had you figured out the food and health piece yet when Oprah was there? Did you help her with her weight issues? So
No, we all complained. I soon became her intern at the TV station and all we did was like, you know, go out and drink and eat and shit like that.
So that was the bad habits era.
Yeah. Man, this was the 80s. This was 79-80. It was another world. I'm not even going to tell you all the stuff we all did back then. You can imagine.
Good.
It was awesome.
And then you cleared it all out. So
I did it all. And then I cleared it out. I mean, honestly, you know, I even used to be a smoker. I lived in Israel for a decade in my early 20s to my early 30s, where smoking was kind of compulsory. this was in the mid 80s to the early 90s, or early 80s to the early 90s, whatever. And I smoked cigarettes even. And that shocks me when I look back on that. But we're resilient people. People are resilient. Animals are resilient. We can repair ourselves. If we're given the right tools, we can repair.
Yeah, and I've read the science on people who were smokers. I've never been a smoker myself. My mother was a chain smoker, and I gagged every day growing up. I hated smoke. But I found, of course, that was then they had TV ads by doctors saying smoking is good for you. It's like, smoking will kill you. So I never did it, but I'm reading now people who did smoke, and as soon as you stop, your body will start helping to heal and repair your lungs, and you can heal from it. So there's hope.
Yeah, the minute you stop smoking, it's true. Your body sort of gives a sigh of relief. Whenever you stop a toxic behavior, the body then your body is so stressed out when you have a lot of toxins and when you keep putting toxins in, so stressed out that you get sick so much more easily. When you stop introducing those toxins, the body is able to relax. And when you relax, you heal. We say in Ayurveda, there's a saying that you can't repair an engine while it's running.
Ah, that's good.
And so I tell a lot of my clients, I have clients who are like, you know, some marathon runners and so on who get sick with something. And I'm like, you must rest during this time period while you're healing. You can't keep going out and pushing yourself to the limits or else your body doesn't heal. So, and there's another saying, rest and digest. And digestion is everything in Ayurveda. It creates your skin, your eyesight, your bones, your fat, your nerve endings, all the way through to the deepest cellular level is created by the food that we eat. And so we have to digest it well. And you need to rest as well as move, but you need to rest.
Yeah, it's all in the balance. And, you know, I was shocked. I mean, I'm doing some research for my forthcoming book on creating an America that works for everyone. I was shocked to find out how bad the food is that most people eat. They call it the standard American diet, SAD. Yeah. It's sad. Uh-huh. That the number one cause of death in America is really poor nutrition, according to the American Medical Association. So it's behind all our other diseases, or almost all of them, is poor eating habits. And people think they're eating healthy, but they're really not. So, and you mentioned earlier, food is medicine. Can you talk a little bit about, like, what are some of the foods? I'm sure it varies by your body type, but in general, like, what kinds of foods will help make us healthy? Sure.
Yeah, you know, we say in Ayurveda that we feel most satisfied when we have the six tastes in our meals. And the six tastes are sweet, sour, salty, pungent, bitter, and astringent. And unfortunately, the American diet is sweet, sour, salty. It's pretty much just sweet and salty. But, you know, we get very little of the bitter, pungent, and astringent in our diet, which are the detoxifying foods. So sweet foods, sweet, sour, and salty comprise mostly of the foods that are densely caloric and highly nutritive, which are important foods. It would include things like rice, potatoes, cheese, meat, breads, grains are included in that category. But we need to balance that with the bitter, pungent, and astringent, which includes like all your leafy greens, like greens that I never saw growing up, like dandelion greens, mustard greens, arugula. I mean, all we had was iceberg lettuce. I love you, Mom, but iceberg lettuce. I mean,
right.
It was a major day if there was romaine in the house.
Bring on the kale.
I know, right. Kale, spinach, chard, collard greens. I mean, these are things, rapini, broccoli greens. These are things that we're never without now, you know, in our home. But we didn't know that growing up, and a lot of people don't know. And using spices judiciously, I love this. In my house, we had a spice drawer that I think had salt, pepper, Lari's seasoned salt, and cinnamon. I think those were the spices we had in our house. And of course, the cinnamon got mixed with sugar before it was used. So it was, you know. But anyway, so.
Well, no, on that point, because it was 3 years ago, I had an Ayurvedic cooking instructor. She was a chef. That's what she does. She cooks at a yoga studio and cooks for people and does cooking classes. She told me that herbs, which I never think of, and I kind of almost never, maybe a little salt, but even that I had cut way back. But she explained to me that spices can be incredibly healing. And then back like Marco Polo and all the traders, they would go and get cinnamon and the incredible health benefits that these spices could bring. That's why they went to such lengths with travel and expense
Absolutely.
To get them, because they saw them as healing. Talk a little bit about like the healing process.
Yeah, that's just so true. There are several really great books about spices that heal, but really all spices have healing properties, which is why it's good to get them fresh and organic. So you have the essential oils and the spices that heal you. Everybody knows now about turmeric. They all want to buy like a turmeric capsule, but that's curcumin. That's an isolate of turmeric. It doesn't work as well as the real product. Mm-hmm. Turmeric will reduce inflammation. Cumin, coriander, and fennel all help to cool down the digestive system and help pitta dosha, that is too much acid in the body, helps to reduce acid. To increase digestive juices, we use ginger. There's another one called ajwain that we use a lot in Indian cooking, which can help with many ailments. So there's so many. I would say, you know, cumin, coriander, fennel, ginger, cinnamon, turmeric are probably the main spices that we use. By the way, curry is not a spice. Curry is a mix of spices. Oh. curry is about, like, if you go to India and say, I want curry spice, you'll get like seven things. It's not just like curry spice. There's garam masala. There's a bunch of different things. But we have to use our spices properly and for our dosha. So let's just say somebody like cayenne pepper, somebody who's very high pitta, a lot of heat, shouldn't use cayenne because that will just increase their heat. But they should definitely use fennel, which will cool off. But we have to temper the spices and cook them properly. We saute our spices in oil before we mix them with the food, because that brings out all the healing properties of the spice. So typically we use ghee in Ayurveda, as I mentioned before, G-H-E-E, which is clarified butter, which when I started in Ayurveda, you couldn't find ghee on a shelf anywhere, but now even Trader Joe's has organic ghee. Target has organic ghee. Everybody does. So it's great. But you can make your own. It's very easy to make as well. But we cook our spices in the oil for just a minute or two until it's very aromatic. And then we combine that mixture with beans, rice, greens, grains. We mix that together. So the spice oil component is an integral part of making your Ayurvedic food. We use a lot of dal, which is lentils, basically. There are beans and lentils that we use in Ayurveda. You don't have to be vegetarian. There are in the food list, which I have in my book and you can find online as well, there are meat recommendations for each dosha also. And so the spices, there's a book I have, I think it's called 101 Healing Spices. By an Indian gentleman, I can't think of the exact name, but I love that book that really gives recipes and histories for all of these spices that we use for healing. But basically, I want to say that once you determine like where your doshic imbalance is, if you're having severe migraines or you have arthritis or you have or you're very overweight or you have problems with digestion and so on, once you discover that imbalance, it's easiest to do the pitta because let's say the migraines and the heat, then you want to do the opposite. So pitta is hot. So you want to eat foods that are considered cooling. Some things that we can think of right away are foods that are watery. So something like cucumber, coconut, that iceberg lettuce is actually watery. And the spices I mentioned, cumin, coriander, fennel, those cooling spices. And reducing things that are hot, like chili peppers, coffee, alcohol, those are all things that heat up the body. And so there's lists of those in my book and everywhere you can find lists of food for your dosha, food guidelines. But that will tell you, that will help you figure out what to do. For something also like too much heat in the body, foods with a lot of acid, like tomatoes. We tell our pitta people, don't eat tomatoes. Avoid nightshades, that increases heat in the body. So some things are like, you don't know, it's sort of maybe even counterintuitive. You don't know, like you think, oh, tomatoes are watery, but they're more acidic than watery. And then like Vata dosha, who's airy and spacey, needs to have that grounding food. So soups and stews, root vegetables, grains, things that are heavier will really help, or nut butters and so on will really help to ground Vata. And then the complete opposite for Kapha, who is heavy and cold. The doshas have these descriptors around them. So then you want to do the opposite. Kapha should eat light food, drying food, but warming food at the same time. So it's really fascinating, but you need to pay attention and you need to understand. Right.
Well, let's take me as a case study. I, like millions of other people, have insomnia, and it's been going on now for 3 years. I average probably 3, maybe 4 hours sleep a night. I'm wondering, like, is there something I should be eating? Or those of us, of course, it helps that we now have a new president. So I'm sure I had some post-Trump syndrome.
I had Trumpitis. I had aches and pains everywhere that I never had before.
Majorly. I have a friend who's a therapist, and he said so many of his clients came in and they were just like so stressed out. And Absolutely. They traced it to the intensity of what we've just been through here. Yeah. So, but now it's like I'm on high alert to defend America, but I can relax sort of. But but so what are you, is there something you could do for insomnia? Like what would you
do? Well, you see, Eleanor, I would need to ask you several more questions before I make recommendations. Because like I said, Ayurveda is not one size fits all. Mm-hmm. And insomnia, there's a kaphic, a vata, and a pitta type of insomnia, depending on what time of night you woke up. And then, but also I'd want to get to the root cause. You said this started 3 or 4 years ago. I understand it started when Trump became president. God, which are two words I hope we never have to utter in the sentence together again.
Yes.
But what I would ask you if we were doing consultation, what else is going on in your life at that time? you know, it's a whole thing, not just the food that you're eating, but any other stressors. Did you move to a new house? When was the last time you got a new bed or change your pillows? Or, you know, there are so many. Are you eating a heavy meal before bed? Are you taking a hot bath? Are you, there are so many questions to ask. What time did you exercise before bed? So basically, I'll give you some hygiene that might help, that could help everybody. Mm-hmm. But your particular circumstance, we probably have to do a one-on-one consultation.
Right. And on that point, I will. I'm going to sign up for your consultation. I so loved your book. It's like, I've known you for years, but I never thought of you like all this. Like, oh, you're such an expert in this.
Aww.
I am going to sign up for a consultation. If our listeners want to sign up, like, how do they contact you?
They can go to my website, which is either my name, Susan Weiss Bohlen, W-E-I-S, like Sam, B like boy, O-H-L-E-N, SusanWeissBohlen.com. Or my business is called Breathe Ayurveda, like Eat, Sleep, and Breathe. My bookstore is Breathe Books, and this is Breathe Ayurveda, D-R-E-A-T-H-E, Ayurveda.com. And then on my website are all the how I do consultations and so on.
Great.
Basically, everybody, I mean, my book has a subtitle about how to sleep better. But right. Basically, some of the recommendations for sleeping better have to do with having a light dinner and eating at least 3 hours before bed. So pretty much around 7 o'clock, because I like all my clients to go to bed no later than 10 o'clock for reasons of digestion. Our digestive fires are hot after 10, which helps to break down everything we took in during the day. If you've had a heavy meal, your body has to slug through that, and that can wake you up. So we want a light meal. So basically, like at 7 o'clock, the kitchen is closed. The kitchen closed. Like in a restaurant, it's like done, no more. You could have some tea or something afterwards, but try to make that last meal light, because unless you're working the evening shift somewhere, you don't really need a ton of food in your system. So just think about that. People can think about that. And then we want to wind down. We want to take some time. Like, you don't want to be like doing online banking or sending an email to somebody that you have been avoiding sending an email to.
Check the news.
Absolutely.
Don't check the news.
Doom scrolling. It's like, yeah, that's a really tough one. Watching violent movies or TV shows before bed, or upsetting things, or having an upsetting conversation before bed. All of that can really disrupt your sleep. Doing light exercise in the evening, we would say there's doshic times of day, but I won't get into everything, but 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. is a kapha time of night. And doing some movement, because kapha can get really lethargic, and everybody kapha gets lethargic at night, but doing some light stretching, doing some like light yoga poses or some warrior poses or some, you know, forward bends, back bends, just light. I'm not talking about, you know, getting on the treadmill and running 5 miles, but some stretching helps to release the toxins in the body. It gets the lymph system working to help push the toxins out. Even little micro movements, like, you know, twirling the wrists and opening and shutting the fingers fast. Even these little micro movements get stuff happening, turning, you know, your neck and so on. So a little bit of that before bed is very helpful as well. And then I do like to have a cup of tea. Sometimes if I feel like I'm having a digestive issue, like I'm having gastro bloating, I will have peppermint tea before bed. Peppermint tea or ginger tea can really help to settle the tummy. And so sometimes I'll just, you know, okay, sometimes it might be a glass of wine, but I know that's not a good idea. But what really helps is, for me, peppermint tea, to have that before bed. And then
you're also not going to tell me I have to give up my chocolate, are you?
No, because you're Pitta dosha, and you might get really mad at me if I tell you that. And I don't want you to know.
Every night I get... My husband started me on this. It's tiny, but we have these little tiny squares of chocolate. They're incredible. They're called HU for human.
Oh, yeah. I know that company. Yeah.
It's like health food chocolate. So they market it.
Yeah. But so what I call that is, I actually call that vitamin H, which means vitamin happy.
Exactly. And happy cells are healthy cells.
And that actually can lower your acidic content, whatever, of your body, and make you more alkaline just by being happy. So there's that whole gut microbiome situation where we need a variety of food And that not only has the good bacteria to help with digestion, but it creates serotonin and dopamine and regulates melatonin, which is very important for sleep. So even though there might be a little bit of caffeine in that chocolate, it could really be helping to regulate. But you might, because of the caffeine in the chocolate, you might think about that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe have it a little bit earlier than you have been, because
mm-hmm.
that could disrupt your sleep. Another thing is in the evening, when it gets dark outside and dark inside our homes, our brain starts to produce melatonin, and that is our sleepy time chemical. And so when, I know that's a very scientific term, sleepy time chemical, I'm not a doctor. So lowering the lights, not having mm-hmm. such bright lights can really be helpful. That's why we want to put our phones and everything into nighttime mode. If we're going to be reading a tablet in bed, you want to have it on nighttime mode, although it's better not to read your tablets in bed and your electronics. Another thing you can do is use essential oils. My favorite is lavender oil for sleep. And so to take, I surround myself with bottles of, I have 4 bottles of essential oils on my desk right now for all different sorts of things. A little bit of lavender oil, just sniffing or putting around your head is really good. And in Ayurveda, we do have a practice of massaging our scalp with oil and massaging the soles of our feet with the same oil, which helps to deeply relax the nervous system. That oil is called Bringaraj oil. It's hard to spell. I probably can't even spell it right now, but you can find it. Just look up sleepy time Ayurvedic oil and I may you'll find it. Or just email me, susan@breatheayurveda.com, and I'll help you to find that. But yeah, there's a ton of rituals. And then also we have something called Vastu Shastra, which is like the feng shui of Ayurveda, this feng shui of the Vedas. So your bed wants to be, should be facing, I think it's anyway, but north, it's in my book. And making sure not to have anything under your bed, getting rid of electronics in your room, EMFs and so on, anything that can disturb your sleep. So there's a whole lot a person can do.
Well, what that's part of what I love about it is it puts us more empowered in taking control of our own health. And, you know, a lot of millions of people are kind of home scared, waiting for the vaccination to deal with the COVID. I had my second one 2 days ago. So
congratulations.
Yeah, I got that in. But, you know, only 10% of the people have had even one dose, and people are having a hard time getting a hold of it. So, yeah. Given this whole situation, like, are there specific things that people can do to strengthen their immune system so they're more resistant to not just the coronavirus, but any kind of virus that might be or disease floating out there?
Yeah, you know, Ayurveda is, we sort of base all of our choices in Ayurveda on what on prevention and longevity. So we want to prevent disease from happening in the first place. So if you're living an Ayurvedic lifestyle or a healthy lifestyle in general beforehand, chances are you won't get sick. But if you do get sick, you'll get better faster, mm-hmm. is what we say. And so just, eating 3 meals a day with your largest meal in the middle of the day, no snacking in between so that your body can digest all the food that's eaten. And then you have this rest period, this little tiny sort of intermittent fast of 4 or 5 hours between a meal is crucial for getting toxins out of the system. And then that longer fast from like 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. or 8 or 9 a.m., that longer fast really helps us to get rid of toxic residue in the system. So stop that snacking, stop grazing. I know you're home, but just like, make your meal and get out of the kitchen and don't go back until it's time for your next meal. Each meal should be about 2 handfuls of food. It's like a bowl, which is 2/3 of your stomach. So we leave 1/3 open for the digestive fires to break down and metabolize the food. And so it is just so incredible what eating 3 meals a day and not snacking and having a light dinner can do for a person. It can change everything because your body starts to function better, your mind is clear and so on. This time of year, as we're in winter going into spring, we still want to have those soups and stews and grounding and hearty foods, but think about adding those greens. Believe it or not, even though it's a snowy day here, You want to start adding in those detoxifying greens to your soups and stews, like the dandelion greens, like chard and kale and so on. Just start tossing that stuff in everything that you make. But if you're eating well, you don't really need to take supplements. But if you're eating foods that is processed, I like to say if it has more than 7 ingredients on the label, don't eat it. I think Michael Pollan said that. I think I stole it.
Well, him, Michael Pollan also said, you know, if your grandmother didn't have access to it, don't eat it.
Yeah.
If you see it advertised, don't eat it. It's not food. It's a food product.
Yeah. Michael Pollan is brilliant. And those books, In Defense of Food and so on, that came out so long ago. That man is really prophetic in a lot of ways, and go read his books too. But if you do want to take, we have something in Ayurveda called Chyawanprash, which is like 108 herbs and spices in like kind of like a apple butter kind of thing. You can get it in an Indian store. Chyawanprash is used to build and strengthen the tissues and the immune system. I'm not even going to try and spell it. I sort of spell like Chyawanprash. And I think I do mention it in the book. But, you know, there is a sort of a COVID protocol my husband and I have been doing by taking extra C, vitamin D3. I take vitamin B supplement because I don't eat meat. And quercetin. You know, quercetin is an analgesic, which... I often recommend for clients who have allergies. It comes from a plant. It's great, quercetin. And I think that's all we've been taking, but I don't even take them every day. I take them every couple of days. I take zinc every couple of days. If I go out, I use Zicam, which has a little liquid thing that you swirl around the inside of your nose. And I also use Nasya oil, which is an Ayurvedic product. We use oil in our nose. I use that usually before bed and in the morning to keep the nasal passages well lubricated, especially in winter, because that's your first line of defense in environmental toxins. I mean, not that we're going anywhere, but if we were, we would. The Nasya oil is really important to use as well.
Yeah.
And exercising, even though, I mean, I just sometimes jog in place. I got to tell you, I looked up Jack LaLanne. When the COVID lockdown first began and I stopped going to the gym, Jack LaLanne, who people under 50 probably have no idea who he is, but he had a TV show back in the 50s, exercise show. And that's all stuff you can do at home right now. I mean, it's amazing. I love Jack LaLanne. So look that up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, Jack LaLanne, I think he's from my hometown of Winthrop, Massachusetts. So I
that's great. Serious.
Jack LaLanne.
Yeah, he was on TV. It was so fun.
And we just have another minute, but I wonder if you could quickly tell us, you know, your book is about seasonal self-care and where, as you say, we're in winter, kind of heading to spring. It's supposed to be in the 50s here next week, believe it or not, and in Texas too, in spite of the blizzards they're having now. But can you just quickly describe, like, what would be the ideal daily routine for this time of year?
Yeah, sure, I will. But I just before that, I do want to say it's very important to say that even if you don't know your dosha, you're not clear on it, or you do know your dosha, it is ideal to live seasonally. It is ideal to work with nature rather than against her. So if you don't know anything, just start to look at seasonal grocery lists for what you can do. So a typical winter day would be starting out by doing some meditation and some breath work for grounding, because it can be cold and you can be a little, it's Vata season, so you can be a little airy and spacey. So some deep breaths through the nose, in four, out four, or doing alternate nostril breathing is really helpful. Doing some meditation, starting your day with hot water usually I start my day with hot water and a little tiny bit of apple cider vinegar, but you can also start with lemon or lime. It helps to alkaline the system. And then some stretching, some either if you want, you can do like your whole routine, or depending on what you have time for, just getting the body moving, ideally outside, even if it's cold. We want to breathe that fresh air outside to get all of those, because we're indoors so much. We're breathing in this like bacteria. Open your windows, open your doors, get outside and breathe some if you can. We do body oiling. And so we cover the whole body with a particular type of oil, and then you can rinse it off and leave a thin sheen on to protect from environmental toxins, as well as to keep your skin moisturized. Eat a warm grounding breakfast. Then, you know, start to go about your day, continuing to sip hot water or warm water throughout the day to keep your tissues hydrated, which helps the flow of toxins out of your body. And also, you know, the hydration is needed in winter when the heat is on and so on. And we forget that because it's cold. You're like, I don't need to drink as much water as when it's hot, but you do. You need to be sipping your water all day long. Mm-hmm. Having that larger lunch in the middle of the day, which is where you really need your protein, is in the middle of the day. Sometime between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. is the largest meal of the day. Then just going about your work, creativity, projects in the afternoon, cleaning the house, whatever it is, and slowly starting to wind down as it gets dark outside, having a dinner of soup, roasted vegetables, you know, maybe a rice bowl, something nice and light, and capping it off with a cup of tea and a nice TV show. And then reading something that makes you feel happy, maybe doing a few more stretches, oiling the head and feet using your lavender oil, and go to sleep.
Sounds like a great day.
That's my day.
I'm going to try that. And that's all the time we have. I'm so happy that you came on the show and share. I have lots more questions, so I hope you will come back soon, maybe in springtime. But Susan Weiss-Bolan, and the book is called Seasonal Self-Care Rituals. And it's a beautiful book and beautifully written. It's like going to a spa. So treat yourself to the book. And thank you so much, Susan.
Thank you. I really appreciate being on. And the book is available everywhere books are sold. It's so please do pick one up. I would love people to learn more about this. Thank you so much, Eleanor. I really love being on your program.
Oh, likewise. It's a real pleasure. Good luck.